the lighter to be back in Cork. Lovely to be reading to you, and thank you so very much for your invitation. I'm going to start reading from my most recent book, Unsweet Dreams. And I wanted this to be my book to fill up because it's mainly on the human side and a little bit of sex thrown in. We had quite up in Dublin at this poetry marathon, and we had to read from one book, so I read from this. So I'm going to start reading the first section is all very short poems, so you have to listen quite carefully or you might miss it. Anyway, I'll start with the first poem, which is an heirloom, and it's from my father. Some heirlooms can be nice and helpful on money. Sometimes they can be awful lumps of stuff you don't want. But my father gave me these words, which he had a lot of fun, and he was full of wit. And this poem is called Heirloom. My father says, it's always good weather in bed. And then, just recently I wrote this, it's called The Tooth. You got there. This is to the two C's, women of woman's independence, the car and the condom. Another, these are very, the short one, marriage. We expect heaven, we are given earth. Now moving to some of the longer ones. These were the poems I read for the marathon thing, which we won the Guinness Book of Records for the most writers reading together. 28 hours of writers reading, which sounds quite painful, really. But anyway, we won the Guinness Book of Records. This is a poem about something that happens most of us sometime or other, and I don't expect this is always the result you feel, but we quite often go to bed having drank coffee too late, and there you are tossing around, not able to sleep. And this is the possible way it might go. Unsweet dreams. Because of coffee taken late, I meet the morning early. I lie here without a mate, straight-haired or curly. Is this how we meet our fate? Out of step and step or and surely? Catch a breath in such a state. Toss and turn ourselves for eight in a sweat and surly. With life or death we have a date, never falling fairly. To sleep I want at any rate, landing on me squarely. Dreams to come and tuck me up, call me sweet and dearie. But night it just hammers on, the moon slides by so pearly, full and round, complete it is, staring at me surely. Underneath its chilling beams, the mind goes round so whirly. If I sleep and now I'll wake up late, oh God, I'm in a shocking state. Perhaps I better masturbate, forget about the heaven's gate. Oh morning, will you never come and send the sun to shine upon this girly? Who's lost all hope, does toss and curse. This night has been the blood worst. And as I reach the final verse, I've bills to pay, my zipper's burst. Put on weight, that's not the worst. Oh, where is love? Give me a break. Pale morning creeps its place to take in shattered sleep, a head that aches. This life is all a bloody fate. And just you note the big mistake to live a life, let them eat cake. Because of coffee taken late, I greet this morning early. Thank you very much. You're very kind. Maybe I'll just read the one that's next door to it. It's called Carbon Dating. It's about our look at love now, but sometimes seems to be a little different. Is love out of date? Who wears it? Is it fashionable? I can't see it around. Must be lying in some attic, dusted occasionally. A sort of antique. Could we get a few quid for it? Love, so innocent and troublesome. We will never suffer it. It can behave in an ugly fashion. Wouldn't have it near you if I were you. It doesn't pay. There are no bonuses or discounts. No one does it nowadays. Wouldn't dream of such uncool behaviour. We're all PC, in control. Keep in top form with exercise, foreign holidays and regular sex for the health. I marked this one. I don't know if I will read it. This is a poem I wrote last year, and sometimes you have a sort of affection for a poem, and this one I rather enjoy. It's for no reason, really. It's called Moon, and it's quite different from the other. The night is still. Moon lies over it. Its individual light is all its own, casting its circle down, a kind of bright magic that each of us can own and bring into our soul. Lies there in spacious skies. We dream on it, we fools with foolish minds. Moon can cast the sort of spell so we leave the world behind, give wild kisses there, are quite blind to bald reality. But what good does that strength subject give? Under the moon's light, I learnt to live. So you take people. Thank you so much. Maybe I'm feeling this one. And this is another slightly different poem. About a simple look at death. Simple truth. You die, girl, and leave me here with tears. Strange and quite unfair, I absolutely know it's not just human fear, but bald and naked truth, that never will I hear exchange words with you again. There lies the endless silence and the human pain. I'll move on to another book now. There's a poem at the end of that one. Just a bit of humour again. This is a love poem. It's called Care. And it's a charm to give good to the one loves. Care, a charm. This my prayer for you. This light day for you, pray for you. God's hand for you, stand for you. Green land for you, wet grass for you. Swallows wing for you, the sea sand for you, the rock strength for you, the trees song for you, thistle down for you, silence for you, cloud for you, rain for you, no pain for you, no hurt before you, a kind step for you, a soft word for you, what I have kept for you in my heart for you, I will not part for you, treasure kept for you, warm for you, away from storm for you. No alarm for you, keep all harm from you. For this night for you, dream of light for you.
this my child for you, for this day for you, this I pray to you, this my prayer. The other day on the radio, one of you, you may have heard it, someone from Kerry talking about Lara Copon, and it's a beautiful place in North Kerry, and I love the name, but also it's a place where under the land there many, many people died in the Great Famine. So the earth there holds the pain of the famine, and down outside the still is a very moving field to go through. That's not to do with, but that area the famine hit very badly, and at the gate of that they have praying for God's call, which is a very simple little saying, but it moves you. But I just wrote this about the sweetness in the name of Lara Copon. Sweetness in the name. The body of the hill throws over, holds out hands to the rain. Lara Copon, Lara Copon, Lara Copon is a love call to the earth itself. The ground holds the cries of the past. Lara Copon, deep cries just under the soil's crust. Lara Copon. All the time the earth is purifying crimes, turns them slowly into growth. Lara Copon. The name carrying a benediction, the energy of a kiss. Lara Copon. Abedoni, Abithir, Noknagoshal, Dwa, Castle Island, Nixor, Clementine, Fenui, Tralee, Lara Copon. I also paint, so I thought I'd read one poem that painting comes into. And there's a beautiful colour called Rose Madder. And I once had a competition with Michael Longley, actually, that we both write a poem about Rose Madder. Because when I mentioned that name, he thought it was beautiful. He never wrote a poem, but I did. And it's called A Tint of Madder. Just before I think, Rose Madder is an oil paint. It's semi-permanent fugitive colour. They actually use that word. You talk of rose madder, you talk of love. Madder and madder and the rose. Fugitive. Who is running? Do we run from love to become madder and madder? The rose is fugitive, opens wide, dying in its love cry to sun and bee. So we will talk of the fugitive rose, not love. No, we will not talk of love, or die like the fugitive rose. I will paint your spectacles, rose madder with love. I thought I'd like to read a poem about animals. Actually, this is about birds, hawks. I was in Florida, which is kind of neat. They're wonderful wild places, but there's also endless concrete and cars and nothing to do with animals. But over this part where the hawks fly, so it's the contrast of the wildness and strength of a hawk against our the brittle world below. The hawks taking unto themselves. Over this flimsy city, the huge wings circle, upwards, their tilt and sweep enormous. Their supreme wings utterly over us, unperturbed by roar and tarmac. They sail the thermals, rule with great flight. Down on the concrete, we shrivel in formal space, civilized and timorous under their fierce and
final grace.
I read a poem now, which will be the title of my next book. I've written it years ago, and I did poems for a long time before I sort of let them out, as it were. And I write them about things that the people, as far as I know, don't write about. This one, anyway. It's called A Good Wine, and the book will be called A Good Wine. And it's about when we cease, as women, to have our periods. I don't think there's been a clear poem about so far. You can tell me if there is. The Good Wine. I have poured my blood out, giving always, used it, curled in my womb, carried it, carefully, forced the child out, bawling. 6 times this womb has stilled. It is enough. Now I choose myself. Wisdom is my own. Even the moon cannot tempt me. I am full grown. Riches I shared so liberally. I pull these tides home. The wine that spilled abundance now is mine alone. I have bred the world on, pushed over a turning. I am stronger than the moon, and those thoughts that give you fear are truer than the sun's eye. I see us ceasing to have our periods as we use bring our body back, our blood back into ourselves for our own use, and I look at it positively, not negatively. And I hope that does it. I want to read a poem about birth. It's not about human birth, it's about an animal's birth. And it comes really, I used it twice actually, it comes from a long poem of mine, Now is the Movable Feast, which was all about the place my mother was born in, County Wells. And this is about the first, we farmed there, my husband and I, for many years, and we bred a few horses. And this is our first foal's birth. And it's called The Black Shed, which was the name of this little field. The Black Shed. The black shed is gone now, tumbled down 50 years ago or more, but the name stands. A little field, too awkward to plough, uneven shaped but sheltered with high hedges and flaring firs. Soon early bite grows quick before milk easing in June. Here mares fold down, and many a heifer heaved her young to earth. A good place for birth. Our first time ever fold was dropped there, one night in the southern wild, a summer storm. Small Dermot rushed the early morning news, but we had felt her coming in the wind's wet knocking. Up and over daylight lane and field, we went in the well-washed morning. Homed by the hedge, the mare, contented, fat, sat back like a dog on her haunches. And this new chocolate life, a clean-licked catkin creature, stood, strut up, high-headed as her dam, swayed nostrils flickering our hands, our faces, and noticed all this new. O jade, O jewel, this morning's miracle. A thing you might know is that cattle and horses choose special places where there are, I can't think of it at the moment, the places where ley lines, that's it. They choose those places to fold down on. They like special places. And it usually, my husband used to, use the stick for finding water, and we did. We found all my grandfather's old drains across the fields with it, and we sunk a well with it. But in, on those spots, they choose to fall down. It's interesting, I think. I really am choosing to go to, I just choose poems I feel I enjoy reading now. It's the best way to feel it, at least I think so. And this is a poem called Signals. And it's about the simpleness of domestic comfort, which isn't necessarily posh, I think. And in fact, I wrote it when we were renting a house, which we used midweek and was down the farm at the Collins and other times. And we were in a house, renting a house, and there were rather hideous wallpapers and sort of uncomfortable stuff. But because it wasn't ours, I wasn't saying to him, we ought to change that and let's do this. We didn't care about it. And actually, it was a great relief because you didn't bother with it. You hated the carpet. Or, you know. So what? So I know it was at that time I wrote this poem, Signals. I speak with simple things, the tongues of teacups, peel curl of potato. This rice has a sweet calligraphy. Here is my hermit's home, Domestos, a comfy god, holding all necessities, full belly, warm hearth. The language of the kettle and the sagging chair reassure as old friends do. To breathe other adventurous air is not needed. This is decent. Like a white tea cloth spread gaily as washing, flapping signals on the wind. I should be talking about the poem while I'm doing this, I'm sorry. Which one's going to be? Oh, I rather like this one, by the way. It's about the Garden of Eden. And it was quite interesting because the other day I discovered some young people had never heard of original sin, which is what Eve is supposed to, because she ate the old apple, that we all got banished out into this life we're living now. So this is the sort of look at that myth or belief of the Garden of Eden. In that garden once, she took down the apple casually because she wanted to know. And then there was all that fuss. Adam going bananas, saying she tipped the apple cart, and God. Oh, God was a pain getting all huffed up about his tree and the serpent splitting its sides under the bushes laughing. To save face after all night discussions behind closed gates, they decided on the lockout. Adam raging that he was implicated because of the odd bite he took, in case she knew more than he did. She did, of course. And now she knew it made no difference which side of the gates of paradise they were, until God took a good look at himself and saw his own womb, his own breast, and not only his staff of righteousness. And another little one beside it, Eve, a new mouth. She sat on the lip of the vent, waiting for some new mouth to open, offering an original thing. I do like apples, and they come, actually, they're on the, I they turn up in my work, I don't know why, because that's actually the cover of my latest book, so there's a blue apple in that. So, and that's one of my, I'm lucky I do my own covers. But this is a poem called Apples, and I'm reading it because I enjoy reading it. September is a harbouring time, curved as arms around a child, as round the apples of the world, drawing in and laying down, resting in the resting place. Finding shelter, find repose, store on shelves for winter's knees, time comes quietly to a close, as the mists dissolve by breeze, as the clouds disperse by night, as the water breaks to foam, as the twilight sinks to night, as the moon that is full blown. Slowly dreams present their bones, shed are stark, gaunt and green. Leaving is a dying art, necessary to begin. Another poem about love, called The Big Greedy. I can't say very much about it really, it's just about simple meetings. The Big Greedy. The honesty of touch, skin asks for, peeling off the outer unnecessary layers, wool, cotton, nylon, polyester, or smelly socks. Skin, white as an almond, delicate, pure water. She needs to say, I love you, because simply on this floor, on this rough blanket, under this floating deep duvet, she does. He says, when she has tears, touches her eyes, but it's good to look. Bodies become so simple by removing wool, cotton, nylon, polyester. Then the big greening of the world slips from them, down through the floorboards, washed through the drains of the earth. I thought I'd write about writing, I'd read this one, and it's, sorry, I'm dropping a bit of paper all over the place, it's taking part. It's also quite a gentle poem, and how we use words really to try and talk about what is not words, our feelings and our important things. To write what is not word, that is quiet, that is still, that moves not, that fears not, that troubles not, stiller than still water. A hose, this is silence, the stillness of pine needles, the stillness of bark, the stillness of stone, that is stone, that is without sound, that is without voice, that is without need. Behold, this is silence. And full, the stillness of bone, the stillness of darkness, warm without terror, empty of thought, full of this space, airy, light, whisper, no footfall on leaves, no footfall on step, no footfall on gravel, no knock on the door. I'm going to move into something else now. I think I've got another apple poem. Maybe I'll leave that for a minute. Well, no, I've got it marked and I'll lose it, I think. So, it's called Sour Apple. Oh, little sharp apple of reason, you've laid out the truth clear and sane. Now I see the dark and the brightness. I'd rather be blinded again. For a fool loves without any caution. For a fool plays any child's game. Ignorance has its own freedom. Oh, I wish to be foolish again. Oh, little sour apple of knowledge, you lie in my palm as a pain. I've bitten and tasted your wisdom. I'd rather be simple again. I'm going to read you a poem about a flea, because they're rather annoying. And it was, I don't know if you know how to catch a flea, if you have one. You need a damp piece of soap. And when you're in bed, it's dark, and you suddenly feel this creature. You switch on a light quickly, and you have your soggy bit of soap, and you dump it, because you'll see the flea, it'll be in the bedlist, and you dump the soap quickly on it, so it's impaled, it's sunk onto the soap. So, good tip. So there you are. I bet you didn't know it, because nobody gets fleas now, ha ha ha. Anyway, this is called The Horrible Sexy Vampire. Our friend, when next the unfriendly megalithic beast prowls nightly through your private landscape, sucking, lover discreet, so sweet you do not feel his piercings. Now, soft, as dawn's pink fingers fold the skies, the blood mark sheet tells tales of prehistoric teeth. Wounds on virgin thighs. But stay, salvation is at hand. Lo, behold, a soggy bar of soap. Grasp tightly and softly tread towards the monster who so invades your bed. Pull back the sheet, expose the violator in post-satiate doze, Desdemona delicate, black as milk. Plunge, this tool, stamp articulate feet, transfer firm magic agility to a bas relief, spread motionless, imprint old as Adam, a fossil replete with memories of nights of blood and lust. Probably be in the next book. So I've written it a long time ago. Again, I suppose it's about life going wrong in the love area. White lilac. You have shut the lid of the coffin on me, and I still breathing. Nails slide down with ease of snake. Down you shovel the earth. You have no prayers for me, only a turned back and a silent mouth. You have brought no candle. What do the wind say, and the standing trees, and the good-mannered worms who wait on me with dainty mouths? I'd like to read you a couple of poems. This is one long poem. I've read you one piece, which was, but I'll read this bit now. I've worked with this poem I've used because it actually is in the time, real time. I've also written a poem purposely in jig time, and I've performed with an Irish dancer. And he dances, and we alternate with jig and reel, with his sounds of his feet and the words, and it's quite fun, really. And this is this movie of the Thief is one long poem. And this actually is about, I was exploring my own family, trying to find out from, you know, you get passed on snippets from your family that this happened and that happened, but you don't really know, at least I didn't. But my grandmother, who I never knew, died, she had pernicious anemia, and she died when they were staying at the seaside, and she died suddenly in the night in this rented house that the family took for the summer. So I was trying to write about that, and how my mother was 19, I think, so this is in real time. Little Lord of Death, take a mighty step, dance, dance to the high hop tune, dance, dance with the lady fair who plays her flute to the cellist's moon. Little Lord of Death, your feet come soon, they know each step in the jigging room, they know each step as lady fair shows the king heel in the grass and June. As the young girls played on the summer's day, as the young girls tingled the piano chin, sang sentimental and played violins, never knowing you were bowing your knick-knock tune. In a house by the sea that they took for the summer, help came late, help came soon. Little Lord of Death has ticked off a number, tired little number in a rented room. Dance, dance, mighty Lord of Death, dance high to your hip-hop tune. The rose that was red is the rose that was white, and she fell down dead in a rented new room. The rose is white and the rose is red. They burst with joy when they're in bloom. They sink and sigh and sodden lie when they open their ears to your knick-knock tune. One I've written quite recently, and it's called Householders, and it's about the magpies. And I was going to call it Property Developers, but it's as you like. They are great. They're up there in the bare trees, prospecting for their nests. The magpies are gardening the bare trees. They inspect and test the small branches, the two of them. The space is all theirs. They are above us. I gather their castoffs for my fire. They know spring is around despite the cruel wind, the ice. They are dressed for all seasons, know what they are about, and work in harmony. They do not have a mortgage to worry about. Can build two or three homes then, beside which has the most favourable aspect. Free but disciplined. It's all completely black and white. This will be the last bit I'm reading. Did that read that right?
Sure.
All right, I put this on. It's one I don't know if I've ever read it before, and I'm sure you all know the carvings of the Shiva and the Gig around the countryside. It's always fascinated me, and there's one particularly beautiful one in down on the Burren. God, I can't remember exactly where that is now, it's gone out of my head. Anyway, over an arch, and she's completely over the arch. And as you know, she shows her ribs, and she's holding open her mouth. And I think I have no idea, because nobody has, but I think she's an ancient god, the ancient mother goddess, probably, and that she represents both death. She's got a grimace, she's holding, and birth. So, this is written, I think, from the man who carved her, and how, despite everything, because there she is, currently pagan in our Christian churches. I think that she's strong, and I call it the open gate, a stonemason's prayer. She also appears in Northern England, all over Ireland, and she also appears in France. And I sort of think this is a stonemason from Northern England. I don't know why. If I did not stone her in, I'd not sleep at night. I have to put her up. I have no choice. None has. Just done like that. It's not spoken of. Speaking this, I'm not wording a true voice. That's hers. She carries all we do not think about. She carries all we know but hardly get. She carries what is good or is without. She carries in her place our deep distress. She's huger than our lives and our poor deaths. Christ and the Virgin can't look her in the eye. They tremble, attempt to do their best, for them like candles. All they can do but try. We know that they do all it at her behest. Sometimes I hear the Mother Mary cry, poor creature. On the wind, I can hear her sigh. My daily work is stone, it is my bread. It gives me joy, this heavy work alone. It's what I'm good at, nor ask why. My father learned this craft and his before. He always put her up, he carved her neat. I always stone her in, we need her there. She knows what's best. I find her place on the arch or edge, so we can pass beneath to gain her holy blessed. Without her, I'd be afraid. She keeps us well and safe. From her high wall, she holds her open gate to heal our ills and fall. So I'll read my last piece. And it's from a long poem of mine, La Corbière, which is about the fate. I also moved it on into a play which was on in the Dublin Theatre Festival in the 80s. It's also been done over in America and two other places. And it was about the arrival and departure of a boatload of French women prostitutes shipped to Jersey for the Nazi soldiers' entertainment during World War II. None of the women were young. The ship they left in was wrecked at La Corbière when they went down in fog on the very rocky coastline. Nearly all the women were drowned. But because during the war none of the people in Jersey were allowed to go down onto the shores, and it was barbed wire, they'd be killed if they did. Their bodies were left in the sea and were seen for days, sometimes alone and sometimes in clusters, their peroxide hair floating out on the waves. I felt that was such a terrible story of the throwaway of people in the war and how human life was discarded and total inhumanity. And this is just the last section of this, when it's describing that particular view, that there was no burial. I tried to find their names, I tried to inquire, I couldn't find anything like that. But, so this is just the last short section. Rock and low. In clusters your bodies dance, together your flowers, yellow hair spread on the sea's tide, rock and flow. For a time you rest on the skin of the sea, balanced over rock cavities. No one is coming. No one is coming with arms to dip, no strong arms to dip down you out from the sea's terror. No one. No white arms over the boat's side to reach over the edge. No one searching. No eyes eager as searchlight as the La Corbière light sweeps its inevitable arc over the storm. No one will lie you out in a quiet room. No one will light a candle at your head and feet. There will be no prayers. No one will push their boat out to take your bodies back to earth. You bob your last dance on the sea's foam, flotsam, rock and flow, spread eagle on the indifferent sea. No chrism to anoint your brow, no incense around your coffin of wood, no name in the newspaper, no name. Sorrow is a lost word. There are no tears. Can the salt sea weep? Only a harsh gull's cry. And on a just a slightly sillier note, it's also about death. Keeping mobile, when I die and go below, please put with me my mobile phone. Keep it topped up in case I find I've had a change of mind.